This is West Virginia Morning from West Virginia Public Radio. I'm Beth Voorhees. When lawmakers passed a resolution in the 2014 session to study public water and sewer systems across the state, it was assumed that study would focus on the safety and security of those systems after January's chemical spill. But that's not what state lawmakers heard during an interim meeting yesterday. Instead, they were presented with a study that said the state is over-regulating those systems and preventing them from better serving their customers. Ashton Mara has more.
No other state regulates publicly owned water and sewer utilities as extensively as West Virginia.
Bob Rodecker is a Charleston attorney who spent years working as general counsel for the West Virginia Public Service Commission. Now, he represents utilities that go before that same commission to get approval for projects, rate increases, or consolidations. Rodecker was commissioned to study how the regulation of West Virginia's publicly owned water utilities compares to 49 other states. Now, let's be clear. This study is focused on regulations for public service districts or water and sewer systems owned by municipalities, not for private companies like, say, West Virginia American Water. That company is corporately owned and traded. Here, Rodecker cites a second report that agreed with his findings.
West Virginia's rate approval process is arduous, lengthy, and elevates risks to bondholders. Utilities in West Virginia face significant obstacles to increasing rates, leading to weaker debt service coverage, less revenue predictability, and a higher likelihood of breaking rate covenants.
Rates, construction projects, contract agreements, mergers, and consolidations. These are all things the State Public Service Commission has the ability to approve or disapprove for any public water system in the state. While the number varies depending on which regulatory power you consider, at most, six or seven other states in the country also regulate those things. The rest leave it up to local governments or water utility boards to control. That's what Paul Calamita, an attorney with the West Virginia Municipal Water Quality Association, says this state should do.
The PSC, instead of regulating viable local government utilities, they should advise and advocate. Advise us when we need financial help. Advocate if there are citizens who don't feel they've had appropriate redress at the local level, but not regulate.
Calamita's group, along with the West Virginia Rural Water Association and others, paid for the study. The groups also advocated for less stringent requirements under Senate Bill 373 for public water systems. That bill was passed in response to Charleston's chemical spill in January as well. Tim Ball manages the Morgantown Utility Board and says if the PSC stopped regulating rate increases, rates in his service district would stay the same. But Richard Hitt, general counsel for the State Public Service Commission, cautions that statement is not relevant for all public utilities.
They're a well-run utility in a growing area of the state, Morgantown. They're not a very good example of the typical public water and sewer system in the state because of low population, access problems, elevation problems.
Aside from being able to control their rates at the local level, those backing the study also claim it's difficult for utilities to build up a contingency fund to use in case of emergency. Calamita likened those funds to the state's rainy day fund.
If you were regulated by the PSC, though, they would tell you you have overcharged the citizens of West by God, Virginia. They would further tell you that before you get any new revenue, you have to spend that $885 million.
Hitt says the PSC does allow for surpluses, and when it comes to emergencies, they take applications for emergency funding approval.
Now, in the last 3 years, we looked at our records, and there's been exactly four applications for approval of emergency borrowing and emergency grants in our records, none of which exceeded $100,000 in any given year. So, I'm not saying they're over-exaggerating, but I'm saying that there's not enough specificity here. I mean, what type of emergencies are they talking about? A pump going bad is one thing. The need to build a project is something else.
Instead, Hitt suggests the state could consider a government-controlled emergency fund, one that would charge maybe 30 or 40 cents more per month for each water customer in the state. The subcommittee co-chairs Delegate Barbara Fleshauer and Senator Bob Williams say this is just the first of many meetings on the issue. They're interested but not sure if the study will lead to any changes during the upcoming legislative session. For West Virginia Public Radio, I'm Ashton Mara in Charleston.
This is West Virginia Morning at 7:38. Cloudy skies today with scattered rain, temperatures in the 50s, a slight chance of rain tonight with lows in the upper 30s and 40s. Mostly sunny and breezy on Thursday with highs remaining in the 50s. Partly cloudy on Friday with another chance of rain, temperatures in the 50s.
Support for West Virginia Public Radio is provided by the New James Cancer Hospital and Solove Research Institute at Ohio State. The New James Center is staffed by dedicated cancer doctors and researchers. The New James opens soon. More information is at cancer.osu.edu.
There are many different methods to pledge your support to West Virginia Public Radio, whether you're considering a one-time gift or becoming a monthly sustaining member. Your support is critical to keeping the programming you've come to count on here on West Virginia Public Radio. The quickest way to donate is with a major credit card. In any way that you make your gift, you're helping to continue West Virginia's story. You can call right now at 1-800-723-4687.
State lawmakers, their staffers, and members of the media have received dozens of emails over the past few days from West Virginians expressing concern over a rule to regulate the ownership of certain animals in the state. At a committee meeting yesterday afternoon, Delegate Misha Poor set the record straight on the claims of violations of due process. Once again, here's Ashton Mara.
Over the past few days, members of West Virginia Public Broadcasting's news staff have been copied on several emails to state lawmakers with complaints. They claim the Dangerous Wild Animals Board, assembled by the Department of Agriculture, violated their due process rights by denying a public hearing on a proposed rule and deleting some of the public's written comments. The rule comes in response to a bill passed earlier this year regulating the types of animals West Virginians can keep as pets and is meant to protect not only people, but also other animals and the environment. The Legislative Rulemaking Review Committee was set to discuss the proposed rule yesterday, but Chair Misha Poor decided to push consideration back another month. That way, lawmakers could read all 130-plus comments the department received and discuss them with their constituents. As for the allegations the agency had broken the law during the rulemaking process, Poor did not mince words. She says the comments provided to the committee are the ones received before the close of the comment period, which acted as a public hearing on the matter.
The agency does not have to provide anything else. And actually, they are told, they're mandated not to consider anything that comes after the deadline. However, because of the discretion of myself and my co-chair, Senator Snyder, 137 comments have been submitted to our members, because we do not want anyone to feel as though they did not have an opportunity to be heard. But I want to make it clear that there was nothing that was not transparent about how this was done. Our staff did act accordingly in regards to making sure they captured the comments, as did the agency from our understanding.
Senator Herb Snyder says he understands why they received so many comments after reviewing the initial list of prohibited animals, which included sugar gliders, mussels, and other seemingly harmless animals.
And I think that started a massive amount of public concern to begin with, and that's extremely unfortunate. To alarm so many members of the public. I was a little alarmed about it, too.
Snyder went on to say, however, some of those animals were included in the final list because they are invasive species not native to West Virginia and could harm the state's ecosystem if introduced. One member of the public did ask to speak to the issue, but because the rule was laid over until their November meeting, he was not permitted. The man left quickly after Poor did not allow his comments according to procedural rules. For West Virginia Public Radio, I'm Ashton Mara in Charleston.
Some researchers at West Virginia University have discovered that wild ginseng, a native and valuable medicinal plant, could be using specific birds to catch a ride into climates it's better suited for. Glennis Board reports.
Eberly Professor of Biology at WVU, Jim McGraw, has been studying ginseng from every angle for 18 years. Together with graduate students Amy Hrushka and Sarah Souther, his latest research tells an ecological story that might shed light on the plant's dwindling ability to propagate and perhaps to survive a changing climate. McGraw says it all kind of started with a simple question. Why does ginseng bear bright red berries?
When a plant evolves fleshy fruits like that, it usually means there's some kind of animal interaction going on, but we had no idea what that was.
So all around wild fruiting ginseng, game cameras were set, and for 3 years, tripped by the occasional raccoon, possum, mouse, or turkey. But there was one pretty regular visitor, the wood thrush. A cousin of the robin, actually, distinguished by superior vocal abilities, which can be attributed to a double set of vocal cords. McGraw says after analyzing some 900 photos, they discovered the thrushes were, in fact, seduced by the bright red ginseng berries.
A few of these photos contained evidence of high-level interactions between the thrushes and the ginseng plant. A few of the photos showed that thrushes had ginseng berries in their beak.
It was kind of a breakthrough, and it spurred more investigation. The next thing to determine was how the seeds survived the thrushes, or if they did. McGraw and researcher Amy Hrushka found out there were captive thrushes living at the Tennessee Aquarium in Chattanooga and convinced the good folks there to let them feed ginseng berries to the birds. The researchers observed that the birds would eat the berries whole, then fly off. After 5 to 30 minutes, though, the thrushes and the ginseng seeds parted ways.
These birds would actually sit on a branch and start flipping their bills together, and a seed would pop out. So the berries were actually being ingested down into the digestive system, and then the seed was regurgitated, and they were completely viable seeds.
So the research team found ginseng's wild seed dispersers. And now, a follow-up study is tracking thrushes during ginseng berry season to see where and how far they wander. It's the latest question commanding attention because, well, ginseng is threatened. Wild populations are increasingly rare. We know over-harvesting, deer browsing, and loss of habitat are major reasons for declines. But McGraw thinks this thrush research might indicate another threat to the survival of wild ginseng.
Wood thrushes, as common as they are, have actually declined over 50% in the last 50 years. They're one of the poster children for major songbird decline in the eastern deciduous forest.
Losing so many birds is very troubling because ginseng populations may well rely on thrushes, not only to help disperse their seeds, but also to help them adapt to a changing climate. McGraw explains.
Another graduate student's research showed that each population of plants is adapted to its long-term temperature climate. So with climate warming, ginseng plants are going to actually have to migrate in order to follow their optimal environment.
Wild ginseng's range stretches from eastern Canada south through the eastern United States. But genetically, the ginseng populations vary and over ages have adapted to their specific regions. McGraw suspects thrushes could play an important role in helping ginseng survive by helping them migrate from their warming regions into cooler climates, if the birds themselves can survive. McGraw hopes continued research will provide more keys to understanding not only our diverse local ecosystems, but also conservation roles humans might play. For West Virginia Public Radio, I'm Glynis Board in Morgantown.
West Virginia Morning is a production of West Virginia Public Broadcasting, which is solely responsible for its content. Keep up with all the latest West Virginia news throughout the day on our website, wvpublic.org. Support for our news bureaus comes from Shepherd University, West Virginia University, Marshall University, and Concord University. Our producer is Ashton Mara. Our director is Teresa Wills. I'm Beth Voorhees.